Chapter 10, The Brainerd Years. I'd come back from the West Coast and had set up a consulting office in a new office building at 3702 East Lake Street in Minneapolis. I really did not plan to be a consultant to radio stations forever, but this kind of office would keep me in touch with the industry until I found some opportunity more appealing to me. One morning, there walked in my office two men whom I did not know, but who were broadcasters in need of help. They were Al Layton and Ken Light, co-owners of radio station KDLM at Detroit Lakes, a station I had built for the original owner some years before. They said they wanted to establish a radio station in Brainerd, Minnesota, that they hired a Washington, D.C. consultant who, after a study, told them there were no frequencies available in that town. But they had heard of me locating and building radio stations and thought I might be able to do the same for them. One of them, at the time, had worked for station KLIZ in Brainerd, and they felt Brainerd could support a second station. They did not have much money, but offered this proposition. If I would locate a frequency and prepare the application to the FCC, they would cut me in on 25% of their newly formed corporation, which they named Greater Minnesota Broadcasting Corporation. Finding a frequency after a well-known Washington consultant had failed intrigued me, so I agreed. The year was 1961. I immediately went to work locating such a frequency. First, I had to go to Brainerd and thoroughly measure the signal strength of all signals coming into the town. I found one frequency, 1340 kilocycles, that showed some promise. I then set out on some weeks of measuring signal strengths of stations also on 1340 between their towns and Brainerd. So I was on the road measuring on a straight line signal strengths between Wilmar and Brainerd, between Detroit Lakes and Brainerd, and between Eveleth and Brainerd. That done, I sat in my office and prepared numerous engineering graphs and figures to show the FCC that a station could be shoehorned in Brainerd on 1340 without causing those stations objectionable interference. And this pile of paper was filed with the FCC, and we all sat down to wait. 3 years went by, and finally, the FCC, in their ponderous way, granted our application and we received the necessary permit. Now it was the spring of 1964, and we were ready to build. About that time, Al decided he wanted no more part of this, so I bought his 25% share of the stock, and now I held 50%. And Ken Light had 50%. It was then that Ken discovered he was fresh out of money, and he gave me this proposition. If I would build the station with my money, he would hire a manager, and he would be in Brainerd every weekend to supervise and help the manager. Ken was a salesman for station WCCO in Minneapolis, and as WCCO has only top people in their organization, I accepted him and this deal with no further thought. And I proceeded to build the station, flying my plane to Brainerd frequently with son Mark, who was then showing a great deal of engineering expertise. Assisting us in Brainerd was George Millen, who was a brilliant radio engineer in the radio communications business in Brainerd. So, KBVR went on the air, May 12, 1964, with a studio and offices in the Ransford Building and transmitter in the swamp south of town. Time went by, and I would fly in from time to time, but spent very little time checking things over. I learned later that Ken never did come to Brainerd, and the manager he hired, who had been a drug salesman up to then and had no background experience in radio, did the best he could with no help from Ken or myself. Then Ken, who was fresh out of money in May, somehow found money in November buying into a cocktail lounge in downtown Minneapolis. It was then he somehow got involved in stealing carloads of meat, shipping it to the West Coast, and he was arrested. Although I hardly knew Ken, I had always sized him up to be just a great big friendly bear of a fellow who trusted everybody, and I can't believe he was ever a crook. Years later, he took a roll of tape out to a golf course and hanged himself. Events around his life had overwhelmed him, and he cracked. Ken went to jail, and shortly after comes a letter from the FCC telling me they knew he was in jail And as no convicted felon can own stock in any radio station, and what were we going to do about it? It was then I bought Ken's stock, dealing with his wife as Ken was in the Stillwater prison. Now, I owned 100% of the stock in Greater Minnesota Broadcasting Corporation, which now owned and operated station KVBR in Brainerd. It was then that I was breaking away from my Sioux City stockholders and the two cable TV systems in Wisconsin, and I moved over to Brainerd to take over my radio station. I resumed my Hello Neighbor Sunday afternoon talk, which I had started at WELY in Ely years before. I talked about events around the station and in the past, a sort of poor man's Paul Harvey program. One of the KVBR staff once remarked, "Charlie sure has the over 70 crowd sewn up." Well, maybe so. June had her 9:15 a.m. Frills and Fancies program every morning and quickly became a top local radio personality. She interviewed endless famous and not-so-famous people, so relaxed and at ease those being interviewed also relaxed, and gave interesting answers to June's questions. One time, she was interviewed by some DJ in Australia via phone. He had heard about KVBR's June, and I chuckled when I heard that June had been mentioned to a top woman personality at the giant WCCO in Minneapolis, and this woman very icily says, "Yes, I have heard about her." June could have been a star in the Twin Cities, but she preferred to be at KVBR in Brainerd. I used to marvel at the way she handled her morning program. It would be 9:12 a.m. and she would be sitting at her desk downstairs, but at exactly 9:15 a.m. she was in the studio upstairs beginning her program. Sometimes I would go upstairs and look through the studio window as June sat with her guest. She would look up, see me there, and smile and wave to me. What a gal. We would be at public gatherings, and I would hear, "Oh, there's June," and people would gather around her, she being a radio star. I basked in reflected glory. She did more than being an on-air personality. She buried herself in office work, which included making up that daily 14-page log the announcers worked from as they went through the day's broadcasting. And, endless times, I saw her sitting on the edge of the bed, at home, evenings, writing up the log for the next day. And when we went to visit our sons in Minneapolis, she took all the log material with her and worked on it at a son's house or a hotel room. But she did more. She called on customers, selling them advertising. More than once I went with her and sat back and listened to her present an advertising plan to a prospective customer. I am the old-time broadcaster, and I did so marvel at her sales presentation. She was a master sales lady, and the new owners of KVBR wanted her to stay on in sales, but she preferred to follow me into retirement, and she became a master chef, using recipes she had gleaned from her many guests on the program. I've never eaten so well in all my life. She continues on with her club work and is publicity chairwoman in a couple of them. What else? And publicity on the air you hear and see in newspapers comes from her with our fax machine at home, sending it out to all local newspapers and radio stations. She is endlessly meeting with women who wish they could hear her program again. And June comes home almost in tears. She does miss radio so much, but she still is the old-fashioned gal who goes where her man goes. After a 2 or 3 year stint at KVBR, the sons went on to establish businesses of their own. Mark went on to establish a broadcast consulting business where he builds radio stations and rebuilds stations. He is known all through the Midwest and beyond and writes radio engineering columns in magazines and is a much sought-after speaker at area and national broadcast conventions. I so remember seeing him standing on a box by a workbench wiring up radio receivers, standing on a box because he was only 5 or 6 years old. He was born a radio man. Son Kim has a tremendous laboratory in Eden Prairie, manufacturing TV commercials and TV training films. One time June and I were at his home where the TV set was on, with sound off, and twice during the evening he pointed at the screen and said, "That's one of ours." If you watch TV at all, you've seen his commercials and didn't know it. Son Scott lives in a beautiful home in Briarwood, a part of Brainerd, with circular driveway and heads an area-wide sales organization selling health products and drives a Lincoln Continental and sits by his computer visiting on the internet. Oldest son, Gary, and my working partner back in Ely days, has a small factory in Edina, manufacturing products used by dentists, and he lives with his cellular phone. He has over 1,500 customers nationwide and some overseas. And we'll be sitting in a restaurant and his cellular phone rings and he takes an order from someone in California. He scorns girls in an office or an answering machine. He wants to talk to his customers direct. That includes talking to customers while he is driving on those wild Twin City freeways. He does lead an exciting life. Too exciting for me. When we took over KVBR, the manager left to pursue other radio interests and later became prominent in Minnesota radio circles. He did, however, leave some sizable bills behind, and those, plus me paying off my old partner, who had held 50% of the stock, left us with a massive financial situation. So June and I dug in, working 7 days a week, with Sunday being just another workday. With the staff reduced to almost no people, June and I did everyone's work. Staying with us was that wonderful Lauren Thompson, who had joined the station when it went on the air in 1964, and staying until his death in 1981. 17 years in which he became so much respected and loved, when he died, a park was named after him, called the Lauren Thompson Memorial Park. Whenever there was a sports dinner, high school or college, Lauren was automatically the MC. He was a broadcaster of the old school. He might travel to some faraway place like Thief River Falls to broadcast a game, get back to Brainerd after midnight, but always was on duty at KVBR at 6 a.m. when the station went on the air. Although he never smoked or drank, he, in later years, developed asthma and was sick a lot. He often went home early to rest, and we never gave it a thought. We knew he was very sick. One time he headed to St. Cloud to broadcast a game, but got no further than Little Falls, where he checked in at the hospital there. Our Minneapolis son, Gary, who was head pharmacist at that giant Methodist hospital, urged us to have Lauren come down there to call on a nationwide specialist in lung diseases. Lauren did, and came back with a drug that did alleviate his suffering. But the doctor, through Gary, did secretly tell us that powerful drug would seriously affect his heart. And it was a heart attack that killed Lauren on a Saturday afternoon. He was buried in the Baxter Cemetery, and I have been there a time or two staring at that flat headstone, remembering the days of long ago. June and I plunged in. I would eat breakfast of sandwiches and Coke at my desk when Lauren came in at 6 a.m. June would come at 7:30 or 8 after preparing breakfast for our sons. One Sunday afternoon, I went home at 3 p.m., feeling guilty, quitting so early. Every cent we took in went to pay off our debts. For the first 2.5 years, I could not write myself a paycheck, and we lived off our savings. Two ex-employees sued us for $50,000 each. Frivolous lawsuits that could never be sustained in court, but when you are sued, you have to defend yourself or lose by default. So I had to hire a lawyer who did squelch the lawsuits and ran up a $2,000 legal bill doing it. I could not pay, and he sued me. I remember so well the last of those lawsuits, papers being served on us at 8 p.m. in the evening at our home. I answered the door, and the sheriff handed me the papers. I walked down the hall at home, papers in hand, and in the back bedroom I found June lying on the bed, crying. She was so tired and so discouraged, and now this. Her crying was the cruelest sound I've ever heard. I never want to hear a sound as cruel again. The debts were gradually paid off, and I could write ourselves small paychecks. Our two sons, Mark and Scott, Mark in the Army, Scott in the Air Force, returned from military duty in Vietnam and joined us. Now, KVBR was really a family radio station. They stayed a few years and then went on to their own successful businesses. Also joining us was Dave Torkelson, a brilliant, experienced, rock-solid, dependable family man who went on to be the top DJ in the Brainerd area, taking the place of much-loved Lauren Thompson. KVBR has had some top-drawer people behind the mic. When you're in the broadcasting business, all kinds of things happen to you, not all of them happy things. Back in 1967, when June and I had just taken over the station, we thought we could provide a real service by opening up the microphone to any and all who called in to express their opinions. So, we announce on the air that starting next Monday at 9 a.m., the mic is open to you. The program, to be called Town Talk, came Monday morning. I'm in the back room with the copying machine, and June comes running back saying, "Charlie, all hell is broken loose." I ran back to the studio, and sure enough, calls were coming in, and all hell had broken loose. Call after call, with listeners complaining about the low pay at the hospital, the surliness of City Hall employees, the potholes on city streets, the high price of gasoline. In fact, in those first broadcast moments, we found out that everything in the world was wrong, giving credence to the belief that the end of the world had come. But we did continue with the program, and that first rush of complaints did taper off, and the program settled down with few problems. Before the program started, I had sold it to the local JCPenney store, who were going to sponsor it starting with the second week. During the week, I called them and suggested they sponsor some other program. And the Town Talk program did continue, year after year. Well, let's say it limped along. When there was a surge of angry calls, I would insist that callers give their name, along with the call. That's when the calls dropped to none, and reluctantly, I would let the announcer resume taking calls from anonymous callers. I felt KVBR was providing a real public service in letting citizens express their views. Not everyone can own a radio station over which to express views, so why not let people use my radio station? But our Town Talk program must have upset some people who wrote the FCC in Washington complaining about our letting the wrong people talk on KVBR. Because one afternoon I received a call from an FCC attorney who said, "I sit here looking at 8,000 radio stations, and I know what you're up against. Just keep on doing what you're doing." Obviously, KVBR was providing a real public service, and I never worried about FCC attitude toward us again. The problem with a program like that is the same people dominate the program, discouraging others from calling. Those same people have valid and constructive remarks, but they do discourage others from calling, and sometimes an unfortunate remark does slip through before the announcer can cut off the mic. One afternoon, a man did call me saying he was going to sue the radio station for some such remark. In fact, he was going to be in my office with his lawyer in an hour, and I had better have our lawyer there when he came. He came, and there was a lot of conversation, and he understood our problems, and he went away, satisfied. In fact, he and I became good friends later on, but in this business, you do sometimes have some bad moments. In the early days, the station was on the air from 6 a.m. till midnight. But times change, and across the country, stations did stay on 24 hours a day, and so did we. Program networks discovered this too, and supplied stations with programs from midnight to 6 a.m. So now, we were on the air, but did not need expensive local announcers at the mic. We only needed someone to be at the station to throw switches. We used college boys and girls. Sure, they got minimum wages, but they had nothing to do but throw a switch at the hour and half hour and never spoke at all, as all announcements were on tape. And these college people sat there through the night hours studying, doing their homework, and getting minimum wage, which was not such a bad deal. No parent ever paid the minimum wages for doing homework at home. This went on for years, and some mighty fine young people came and went. But in more recent years, the supply of college people dried up, and we were forced to hire adults, and that's when the problem started. There came a series of people who were disasters. Drunks, party people who held parties with their friends, people who would call at 5 p.m. saying they weren't coming to work at 6 p.m., with me frantically trying to find a replacement in 1 hour. Men molesting the women they were relieving at midnight. Name a problem, we had it. It was then I discovered automation machines, and I installed one that cost a pile. It did the switching job so beautifully, no one could ever suspect there was not someone at the studio running the station. The machine always showed up on time, never called in sick, never came drunk, never threw a party, always faithful and true. Then the cry. Charlie installed a machine throwing people out of work. I think people threw themselves out of work. I preferred people, but I was driven to the wall and acted accordingly. Of course, broadcasting does attract some unusual people. There was this one morning announcer who did provide an exciting new voice attracting a sizable audience, but there were flaws. He had worked at radio stations across the country from the West Coast to here, and he bragged on the air that he had never worked at any radio station more than 3 months. And that's exactly what happened at KVBR. After 3 months, we found him just a little too exciting for the Brainerd area, and we sent him on his way. A few months later, we heard he was working for some station in Louisiana. He likely had been at 10 more stations since then. At least, he is seeing the world from behind the mic. Of course, most people at radio stations are good, steady, hard-working people, but sometimes station owners will dip into the crackpot pool to provide programming attracting listeners. One of the steady, dependable people was Keith Moylanen and his co-worker John Happioki, as they covered the sports scene for KVBR. This was after Lauren Thompson died. One important program they provide is the Saturday morning Coach's Corner bit, where they and local coaches gathered at a Bonanza restaurant for breakfast and to give the coaches an opportunity to explain why their team lost the night before. Then there was Don Kelly, KVBR's full-time newsman. No other station in the area had a full-time newsman or woman. He was with us 23 years, coming in at 6 a.m. each day and working till early afternoon. He was famous throughout Minnesota, with stations calling him every time there was some area news of note. I do not recall any one time in those 23 years when he called in sick. I know he was sick sometimes, but he was on the job, fever and all. The job had to be done, and he did it. After we left, he left too to be near a brother in St. Paul. Taking his place is Linda Andrews, who's upholding the KVBR tradition of being the dominant news station in the area. June interviewed endless people on her program and at other times. She could tell 100 stories, and I remember one. She was interviewing our son Gary, who came up from Edina for overnight. They talked about jogging. When you live in plush Edina, you jog, you know, doesn't everyone? In the latest jogging meet, he said 125 Edina people had participated. June had asked how he had come out. He said he came in 7th. June allowed as how that was pretty good, 7th out of 125. Then he said, well, it wasn't quite like that. He said he came in 7th in the over 40 crowd. June said, well, how many in that crowd? Gary said, 7. The IRS audited our company twice. In the first audit, a woman IRS agent came up from their St. Cloud office and was in our office a couple days a week, over a month and a half. We found a comfortable desk for her with excellent lighting and brought to her endless boxes of receipts and records. The IRS does not audit you the year you are in. They pick out some year in the past, and you almost panic wondering what wrong things you did that year. Of course, the year she picked was the year June and I went to Hawaii for a week, charging up the trip to the company, a strict no-no if you were there only on a pleasure trip. But June was able to show this agent endless tapes she had made of personalities while there. Actually, June had run around with a tape recorder the week we were there to use on her program. Even the famous Don Ho. You know, June. The agent was impressed, and when she finally left, she said everything appeared to be in order. A week later, a letter came from the St. Cloud IRS office telling us everything was in order and thanks for being so cooperative with their agent. The second time the IRS audited our company was when we were out of business and I was retired. I called the St. Cloud IRS office and said, don't come, we're not in business. But he came anyway, and we had an interesting hour in our home looking at a blank checkbook and chatting. But he said he had to come. The computer had picked us out, and he had to make the call. He said he once had to call on a tiny business way out in the woods. and he knew there was no one there, but the computer said, go, and he went. Such are the wondrous and thorough ways of the IRS. And the FCC inspector would show up. Not often, but they did show. Our consulting engineer's son, Mark, had written a small book telling stations how to survive an FCC inspection. This book he was supplying to his many radio station customers in the Midwest. When the FCC inspector would come, he would see Mark's well-thumbed and much-referred-to book on my desk, and right then the inspection was half over, and we were winning. One day, in 1982, I woke up and discovered I was 73 years old, and aren't men supposed to retire at 65? It was then some Fargo broadcasters discovered KVBR and Brainerd and thought how nice it would be to add this successful station to their group. They already owned a radio station in Fargo and in Duluth. Actually, it was WEBC in Duluth, of all stations. And Brainerd was a midstop in their traveling between Fargo and Duluth. So there was a sale, and June and I retired to our beautiful home on Lake Sylvan, just west of Brainerd. Now, for the first time in my life, I found I had nothing to do except count the waves on the lake washing ashore. One day, a lot of excitement, an extra wave came in. I started writing this book, and after many pages, laid it aside. 3 years went by, and the Fargo people were weary of running KVBR, and so we met, and June and I took KVBR back again. At lunch one day, one of the Fargo principals said to June and myself, "We found out we did not know how to run a station in a small town. They were successful big city operators, and small towns puzzled them." So now I'm back in my old office, sitting in the same office chair and looking across the room at the same wall. 3 years before, in 1980, the Minnesota Broadcasters Association had honored me at a dinner in St. Paul, naming me as Minnesota's pioneer broadcaster. Now, I was back in broadcasting and would be for another 8 years. If I was Minnesota's pioneer broadcaster in 1980, what was I in 1994 at the age of 85? Some years went by, and family and friends kept reminding me that I was not eternal and that I really should give retirement a try. So reluctantly, I agreed and took off my gloves and climbed out of the ring. Now comes in the picture the Ingstad organization, which owned radio stations all across the Midwest. I was interested. Here was a family of young people who had progressive ideas. In fact, they were 10 years ahead of their time. Through the years, I had noticed that newspapers had been combining in their city to give the advertisers one newspaper to advertise in, whereas before the advertiser had to divide his advertising dollar among several papers. Radio stations were going in the opposite direction. They were proliferating in every market, dividing up the radio advertising dollar, and everyone was the poorer for it. The Ingstads were combining radio stations, and they did just that in Brainerd, adding my KVBR AM and KVBR FM to their already KLIZ AM and KLIZ FM. In Brainerd, they then had four radio stations in the Brainerd market. When they did that, they moved the four stations into beautiful downtown headquarters looking much like a swank Twin Cities station and something Brainerd could be proud of under the capable leader of Jeff Hilborn. So, I clear out my desk again and move it to my home on Lake Sylvan. But I do not go out of business. I continue on as manager of June Persons Properties, which is a group of home rental units in Brainerd, Duluth, Edina, and Eden Prairie. Real estate properties we had acquired through the years. Now I am writing leases, collecting rents, paying bills, and evicting tenants, which involves a lot of paper shuffling. And also now I work for June, but the pay is good, and besides, she cooks my meals. Boy, I haven't made. And while the negotiations with the Ingstads were going on between our attorney here in Brainerd and their attorney in Park Rapids, Minnesota, no letters were written, although there was a great deal of mail going back and forth. Sending letters by mail would have taken many days. Instead, the two attorneys communicated their many letters using that new electronic marvel, the fax system, where a letter is sent over the phone line in 30 seconds. And When the final settlement was made, no check was mailed to us. Instead, the transfer of funds was made electronically. As I sat marveling at all this, my thoughts kept going back to my early days in radio when I played records over WEBC, setting a microphone in front of an acoustic phonograph, winding up the motor, and sitting back silent, so my talking would not go out over the air with the music. I so much became aware that I had been in broadcasting a long time. Actually, it was 68 years, with my age going from 17 to 85. Broadcasting and I grew up together. So, how was your day?